everybody. Welcome to another Psalm Session. You've got Miles, and joining me on the phone, the Aqualad to my Aquaman, the Batman to my Robin, the Supergirl to my Superman.
It's Brent here. See, I purposely paused that.
That was a long, awkward one. People are going to be like, what's going on? What's happening?
I know.
How you doing?
I know. I'm good. Still pretty much the same.
Still
really.
The same. Not a whole lot's changed?
Well, there's not a whole lot changed in the world right now.
No, there's not. How's the new puppy working out? You've got one of those.
Puppy's good. Yeah, that's made summer interesting. It is literally like having a brand new baby. And, you know, we always said we were done having kids, and I feel like we just had another kid.
It's true. Well, but it's man's best friend. Like, is he your best buddy now? Or are you guys like...
We're pals.
You're a power couple? Is that's a thing now?
We're real tight.
Nice. Nice. That's good. Yep. What, on the topic of power couples, I don't know why, but what's your go-to favorite duo? I don't care if it's music, I don't care if it, like, I'm just thinking about like the Batmans and the Robins and the, you know, who's your go-to duo?
Well, it's not David Lee Roth and Sammy Hagar, because they don't mesh well.
They don't play well with others. No,
nope, they don't play nice in the sandbox, like even a little bit.
Really, eh? That's too bad.
No.
But that, you know, I don't know. I'm speaking totally from like hearsay, but doesn't that happen a lot? Like, you look at a lot of those famous duos, like Simon and Garfunkel, like some of the drama that went around with those guys, and, you know, Art Garfunkel wasn't being paid the same, and Paul Simon stealing songs, and like all this crazy stuff that seems, and I don't know why, but I feel like, and this is totally just me, but I feel like it happens more in duos than bigger bands.
Well, hey, let's, the Oasis is a band, but, you know, it's kind of a duo, the two Gallagher brothers, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, those guys are like oil and water. I think they fist fights on stage. I don't know.
That's also, oil and water is also one of my least favorite duos.
No, that's not. So I think of, this will surprise you, because country music is not really my thing.
Okay.
Shocker.
Yeah, no.
But think about some huge country duos, many of which are super popular and just riding a massive wave right now, like Dan and Shay and Big and Rich, Brooks and Dunn. Like, I feel like country music is really,
I
really
only
big
knew Brooks
duos.
And Dunn. The Brooks and Dunn, that was it. The first ones that you just mentioned, I was like, I have no idea who that is.
Love it.
I have absolutely idea who you're talking about right now.
But you're going to Google it.
Probably not. No, I'm probably actually going to totally never do that. Country music's not my jam, man. I can't really get into that. It's just not my thing. But you do you.
Good chat.
Well, look, the reason why we're talking about power duos today is because, of course, our guest today, so like the rap sheet for these guys is crazy. So 6 number ones, 34 chart hits, 7 platinum, 6 gold albums, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductees, featured with the Good Road Band, and celebrating 50 years as half of the iconic duo Hall and Oates. Why don't we jump on over the phone and say hi to our guest today, none other than Mr. John Oates.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's a pleasure to be here, and good to talk about music. We like that.
Yes, absolutely. You and now I've got to ask. I mean, you had announced a huge summer tour for Hall & Oates that I understand has been mostly postponed to next year. How are you holding up? How are you hunkering down in all of this?
Well, you know, it was a very unusual start to the 2020. You know, I in January I recorded this album live from Nashville with my Nashville band, the Good Road Band, and you know, I had spent 2 years touring with those guys ever since making the Arkansas album, and the band had really gelled, and I was really excited about, you know, about really kind of putting a little cap on that project. You know, the band was playing so well, and so anyway, we recorded it in Nashville in January, not even thinking that anything was going to happen unusual for a year, and I was all set to put on my Hall & Oates hat and go out on a 40-city tour with Daryl.
Wow.
Then late February came, Daryl and I did our first show at Madison Square Garden and sold it out, And we thought, wow, what a way to start the year. This is going to be amazing. And that's when the rug got pulled out from all of us, and life as we know it changed drastically.
Wow.
So here I am, you know, instead of being on a big tour with Daryl, I'm home. I'm writing songs, trying to stay fit, you know, getting outside as much as I can, and enjoying being with my wife and at the house. In the meantime, I'm sitting on this amazing recording that I did in January, and I thought, you know what? There's no live shows, and this album, live album, is certainly not a substitute for that, but nevertheless, might be a good vibe to put it out, and that's what we're doing.
Absolutely, and we're going to dig into Live from Nashville. I've got some questions leading up to it, because I'm excited. I was a big fan of the Arkansas album when it came out. You know, Palette Soft and Low, it personally is one of my favorite songs on that album. Tell me about Arkansas. How does John Oates from Philadelphia end up at this roots folk-driven, I mean, the mandolin alone on that album is stunning. Like, how did you arrive at that album?
Well, in a very circuitous route, I never actually intended to make that album. Well, what I did was I love being in the studio. I love just recording, creating, whatever. And I had no intentions of making an album, to be honest with you. I wanted to record some Mississippi John Hurt songs because he's a childhood hero of mine, and I know all his material, and I play his songs in a very authentic manner. Got to see him play in the early 60s when he was being rediscovered. And I actually own his guitar from
wow.
the early days, from the early 60s. So I went in the studio, recorded a few John Hurt classics in a very traditional manner with acoustic guitar and voice. I thought to myself, yeah, it's pretty good, you know, but I don't know. But I didn't really want to abandon the idea of these great songs. And I thought, you know, I've never heard these songs played with a band. And I thought, let me assemble this really unique band. And my first call, of course, as you mentioned, was to the great mandolin legend Sam Bush, who's been a very good friend of mine and welcomed me to Nashville many, many years ago. And I got Sam on board and then put together this incredible band of friends and people who I had been playing with on and off in different configurations. Guthrie Trapp on lead guitar, Steve Mackey on bass, Josh Daddy Day on drums, Russ Paul on pedal steel.
Mm-hmm.
And then to kind of make the thing a little bit unusual, I brought in a cello player.
Nice.
A guy named Nathaniel Smith, who plays with the Casey Musgraves band. And, you know, I thought a mandolin, a cello, and a pedal steel, and that's a unique instrumentation for what I expected to be a blues album, or at least an old time album. And the sound was so unique and so incredible from the very first track we cut that my engineer said, Johnny, because I don't know what you want to call this thing, but it's really cool. You should just keep doing it. So to expand beyond Mississippi John Hurt, I decided to incorporate songs of the period of time when he was first recording in the late 1920s, and what might have been on jukeboxes, what might have been played on the early days of radio. And that's how the album, the Arkansas album, became a kind of a snapshot of the early days of American popular music.
John, I want to ask you about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Getting inducted is obviously something that acknowledges your contribution to music history. Kind of gazing back on your career and, you know, on the cusp of this brand new music this year, what are you most proud of when you look back on your career?
I'm most proud of the fact that I'm actually still doing exactly what I want to do and more than I ever dreamed I could do. The fact that fans and music fans have embraced the music that Daryl and I have created over the years and have allowed both of us independently to pursue other things and still have accepted them as well. I think it's very unique that a lot of bands, you know, they try to do solo projects, they do different things, and a lot of the fans just don't accept it. You know, they want people to stay in their box. And our fans have been incredibly musically open-minded, and I'm just proud of that, the fact that, you know, that I'm healthy enough to still enjoy what I do, and that my music, my commercial success has allowed me the creative freedom to do pretty much whatever I want.
Nice. And I read a quote that I'm hoping that they quoted you correctly, that you said to Billboard, and that was in effect that, you know, after 50 years, your life doesn't revolve around record labels, timetables, and release dates anymore. And I really liked hearing that? Because I guess my question would be, you know, what does your musical journey now revolve around? And how, like, what is musically important to you now that you may not have necessarily picked up on starting out 50 plus years ago?
Well, you know, 50 plus years ago, when Daryl and I were starting out, you know, that was a different, the music business operated on a different wavelength, a different paradigm. It was, you know, it was the old fashioned way of try to sign yourself to a major record contract, make an album, have a hit single, go on tour, you know, and it's still somewhat the same, but not really. You know, the idea of the major labels, you know, running basically dictating how music would be delivered and how fans could receive it through their association with commercial radio, all that's broken down now and has become you know, a completely different playing field with the rise of the digital and the internet. So I'm very proud of the fact that Daryl and I were, you know, in the mid 90s decided that we didn't want to be part of that anymore, and that we were one of the first kind of what you'd call, I guess, classic rock bands, or bands with a successful commercial past, that went out and said, you know, we're just going to put our own records out. And if we don't sell millions of copies, and if we sell less but make all the money, who cares?
Yeah.
You know, and we'll be playing to our fans as opposed to trying to reach, you know, the entire world. And so I think I was very proud of the fact that we were able to shift and pivot and make that decision. And ever since that time, both he and I have never, you know, we've always released independent albums, whether they be together or separately.
Nice.
You've touched on something that I wanted to ask you about, just the process of creating music, conceiving and writing and recording. How is it different today, or how is it changed over the evolution of your career, and what do you say to emerging artists and younger musicians that are looking to break out and start their own career?
Well, you know, it's a completely different world. There's so much, you know, there's so much positive about the modern way of digitally distributing your music, you know, through the internet, through Instagram and YouTube, et cetera, you know, and the streaming services, Spotify and Pandora or whatever. There's so much good about that, but there's also a lot of negative in that there's so much music and so much available that it's hard to really, you know, kind of coalesce a group of people to actually listen to what you're doing, because there's just so much out there. And, you know, I do regret the kind of the loss of the album as an art form, because it essentially is over. You know, with people being able to pick and choose their own playlists and you know, deciding what they want to choose independently. You know, the idea of making an album is still, you know, if someone wants to do it, that's great. I felt the Arkansas album needed to be done as an album because it was really, it was representing music from a period of time. So in that regard, the album concept worked fine for that project. But going forward in the future, you know, I'm about to release a series of singles for a movie I'm working on, and has nothing to do with an album. So I think really, you know, the younger musicians have already embraced the new way of working, and they're very savvy about how to do that and coming up with unique ways of digitally distributing their music.
Where did you find this content? You know, like, it feels very far afield from what we've come to expect from you. And like I said, personally, I love it. And I'm excited. I'm guessing Live in Nashville, from what I've heard from the single you released, Anytime, it almost feels like a continuation, if that's accurate to say. But where are you finding this content as you're sitting down and writing these songs? They feel very Americana and like you say, an old school genre. Where is this inspiration coming from?
What the casual fan doesn't really know about me is that before I met Daryl Hall, I was playing the guitar for about 12, 13 years. So I was already a fairly accomplished guitar player. Mm-hmm. I was playing a lot of roots music, a lot of what is now called Americana. I was playing Delta blues, bluegrass, Appalachian. I was playing swing music. I was playing bossa nova. So this was the music of my really earliest, my earliest musical DNA, so to speak. When I met Daryl, we kind of combined our influences and created something totally new and different. And of course, the commercial success and the longevity of my partnership with him, really, of course, everyone assumes that that's who I am. I'm a pop songwriter, and I, you know, survived the 70s and had huge hits in the 80s, and all that's true. But at the same time, I have a depth of knowledge of the roots music of America that goes way beyond that. And it was my move to Nashville that allowed me to begin to express that, because I found a group of kindred spirits musically in the Americana community. And they kind of knew what I was doing, why I was doing what I was doing, and the authenticity of what I was doing was true. I mean, you can't just, you know, it's very hard to just go, I was doing this music for years and years, and I experienced it firsthand, you know, during the folk revival in the early 60s, by seeing and meeting Doc Watson, playing with Doc Watson, seeing Mississippi John Hurt, you know, seeing Sunhouse and Sonny Terry and Brownie McGee. So it's really, it's an authentic part of my musical history. And so I'm able to now bring it out. And like I said, finding this group of musicians, the Good Road Band, to help me express it.
I love that. And speaking as I'm a clawhammer banjo player, so, okay. You know, which is why... Yeah, everything you're saying, it makes me giddy. Like I am so excited. Like, tell me about this new album. So from what I've read, it's going to have a series of covers, and you've got some originals on there. So tell us about the process of this album.
Well, yeah, I mean, and this was part of your question, I believe. It is definitely an outgrowth of the Arkansas album. It's rooted in the material on the Arkansas album, but because I was on the road with this band for 2 years, you know, as a band plays live, you know, you're always adding new songs, you're trying new things. So even though the core of the material is from the Arkansas album, there was other things that happened. There was an old song that I wrote with Sam Bush and Jeff Black called This Field Is Mine that I've always loved, and I never had a chance to record it or play it. So I decided to add that in, and especially because Sam was playing with us that night. I had done a tribute to Johnny Cash for a documentary film that's coming out on his life, and I was asked to do one of his songs, and I looked into the songs, and, you know, I don't really do Johnny Cash type material, but one of his songs I read where he had written it as a slow blues, but Sam Phillips, who was the president of Sun Records at the time, wanted him to do it as an up-tempo country song. So I said, let me see if I could reimagine it, maybe perhaps the way Johnny Cash originally heard it. So I did Big River, a very, very popular Johnny Cash song, but I kind of reimagined it as a slow blues. So we added that on there. The Jimmy Rogers song, Miss the Mississippi and You, that came, I did a Jimmy Rogers tribute in Bristol, Tennessee at the Bristol Rhythm and Roots Festival, and I performed that song and fell in love with it. And then I found later on, after doing some research, that Mississippi John Hurt was a huge Jimmy Rogers fan, which I never knew. And I thought, well, that makes perfect sense. Now let's put a Jimmy Rogers song on the album. And so it goes. All the songs on the album have a personal connection. They're not just random covers that I decided to play.
Nice.
I put the song Oh Lonesome Me, the Don Gibson song, on the record because when I was a kid at about 10 years old, that song had come out, and it was one of the first songs I ever played and sang on the guitar and accompanied myself. And I thought this would be a really cool, full circle moment to play a song that I played when I was 10 years old and bring it back. So, you know, as I said, every song has meaning. They're not just, just willy-nilly, you know, oh, here's a good song, let's just play this. They all have a connection to me in some way or another, musically or personally.
Nice. And we can expect this album in September, correct?
September 18th on all digital platforms. It will be available physically on Amazon as a CD.
Oh, beautiful. Beautiful.
But it's basically a digital release. I've never done a full digital release before, so this is a new territory I'm moving into. But we'll see what happens. I'm very proud of it. The playing is off the charts.
Nice.
The musicianship is incredible. And, you know, in this world where we're not getting too much or any live music, you know, to have a live album in a way, which I never really planned it this way. I'd like to think, you know, that I strategized this all, but I didn't. It's just, you know, it's a poor substitute for a live show, but it's better than nothing.
Nice.
Well, you know, it's interesting, John, that you say that. And everything talking about this new music, it's obviously very purposeful and very meaningful. As you say, each and every song, you know, has a meaning and there's a reason why it's included. We talked it off the top about tours are paused. There's no live music happening right now. There's no real opportunity to be connecting with fans and kind of having that feeling of being on the stage. I wanted to ask you, and I often like to ask artists we talk to, I'm curious if you sort of take an approach of you record music for the purpose of touring and playing it live, or when you are touring, do you get inspired to write as if, you know, is one kind of a means to another?
I think my whole life if you're a songwriter, I think your antenna is up all the time. You know, whether you're touring, you're waking up, you're dreaming, you're reading a newspaper, you know, listening to the radio. It seems like as a songwriter, I'm always, you know, attuned to some possibilities. Whether I sit down and write it out and it actually becomes real, I can't say. I don't write a lot when I'm on tour because I'm really, it's a different discipline. It's more about throwing it out. You know, everything goes outward, you know, outward to the audience. It's about energy. It's about entertainment. Whereas the songwriting process for me is more introspective. It's more bringing it in. It's more bringing it, you know, kind of conjuring something up from nothing. So they're really two different things for me.
Nice. So talking about conjuring things up, is there truth to what we're hearing that a new Hall & Oates album is in the works?
Well, there was.
Yeah, there was.
Dale and I were getting ready to start one when this whole thing happened and, you know, and everything changed and the world stopped. I had written a few ideas down. I had sent him a few ideas to see what he thought and to find out what he was doing. He sent me a couple ideas. And we were doing it remotely and we were about to get together. And then, of course, that all came to a halt.
Yeah.
So right now it's on hold. You know, we'd like to do one, and I'm sure we will at some point, but right now there's nothing happening.
Fair enough. And so just kind of one last question for you, and it is talking about Daryl Hall. And, you know, the two of you have been together and kind of managing this enterprise for 50 years. Like, how have you found your balance in that, and how have you maintained the staying power that the two of you have?
Well, I think we both respected each other's individuality and each other's need to be we perceived as individual musicians. We've never seen ourselves as the two-headed monster, you know, as this you know, this duo that could not be separated. We've been separated ever since we started. Daryl has made solo albums as far back as the mid-70s. So this is nothing new for us. I came a little later to the game in the late 90s, early 2000s. But it's just that's how we see ourselves. We see ourselves as two individuals who work together and have a certain magic when we work together, but are not exclusive to each other.
Nice. Well, everybody, we've been chatting with John Oates, of course, half of the famous iconic duo, Hall & Oates. John's new album, Live from Nashville, coming to you September 18th. Go check out the single Anytime, because it is excellent. I'm looking forward to that album. And again, John, thank you so much for your time today. We really do appreciate that.
Oh, I appreciate it. I hope everyone enjoys the record when it comes out on September 18th.
And, absolutely.
It's been a labor of love. And if you want to hear a great band playing, this is for you.
Oh, and they are. The Good Road Band is stellar. Like you mentioned there, Sam Bush on the mandolin is a personal idol of mine. And great work. We're looking forward to that album. Again, John, thank you so much. And stay safe and stay sane out there. Do what you can do.
That's what we're doing.
All right. John, well, thank you so much. You take care.
You too. Thank you so much.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thanks, John.
Well, there was our interview with John Oates. That was cool. I following his career, like 50 plus years, you know, in the same duo group, which I know that they don't really call themselves a duo, but yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, just to riff a little on what you're saying, I mean, any artist who has a career that has spanned, you know, half a century, five decades, 50 years.
Yeah.
And he said it himself, you know, he's most proud of the fact that he still has the ability. He still has his health. He, you know, still is fortunate that, you know, he can take all of the fame and fortune and everything that he's earned and, you know, still to be able to be playing the music yes. and recording the music that he wants to make. And that's, I mean, I think that's probably ultimately what it's all about. It might not, you know, on the surface, it looks like it's all about mansions and fancy cars, but you know, it's very clearly for him about doing whatever he wants to
absolutely
do.
And you talk about that staying power, like they Hall & Oates, if you look on Spotify, and I mean these metrics don't take them all with a grain of salt, but they are still, you know, a band that's been around for 50 years. Their hits came out in the 80s. Well, I should say some of their hits came out in the 80s. They are in the top 300 of all artists streamed globally through yeah. Spotify.
Listen,
and there's millions
it,
of artists on Spotify. That's
no goodness. If you think back to you know when we were both kids and you know, the early era of MTV and
oh,
Much
yeah.
Music and you know their songs were on the radio all the time.
Yeah,
their
oh,
music videos were on TV all the time. And I'm telling you, I'm circling this date on my calendar because we just talked to a Rock and Roll Hall of Famer.
Yeah, right. I know that was cool. And yeah, the Good Road Band, if you've never heard them, just them, you need to go check them out because they are this amazing blues, like I said, Americana, like they're blues and they're folky. And Sam Bush is easily one of the best mandolin players on the planet. And, you know, this album, I think it's going to be very cool. If it's anything like the last one was, this album is going to be very cool.
Well, I look at it like this, you know, a lot of times when I go and, you know, slap my money down and I buy a ticket to go and see a concert, see an artist I really want to see, I end up often being very pleasantly surprised by the support acts, by the opening acts that
yeah.
are playing with those bands I've gone to see, And many times it's actually gotten me interested in some different music or a different band. I've, you know, gone out and purchased their music or sought out learning more about them when I really had no exposure.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm going to be honest and put my hand up and say, you know, you think of John Oates and right away you go straight to the hits that Hall & Oates had.
Yeah.
And this is actually in a similar way to seeing some of those opening acts. This is probably now going to push me to go and explore a little bit more about his career and hear some of the other music that he's recorded.
And by the time it's all done, I know you'll be listening, you'll have your headphones on, you'll be sitting by the pool and you'll just look out at the universe and you'll say, John Oates, you make my dreams come true.
Oh.
Hey, here's what we'll do. So this album drops on September 18th. So you come on over to my place. We'll go straight up Americana with it. We'll put some Franks on the barbecue. We'll crack open some beer. We'll get some potato salad going. We'll play this album start to finish. We'll fire some fireworks. We'll make it a whole ordeal.
I love everything you just said.
Awesome. We're going to do it. That is all the time that we have today. Thank you so much for tuning in. Please keep subscribing. I am beside myself to say that we are actually nearing 2,000 subscribers on our show, which, you know, I'm going to say on behalf of Brent and myself, thank you to everybody who continues to listen. We sure do appreciate it. So follow us, subscribe, click whatever button your thing wants you to click, because we have some amazing guests lined up. It's been the tip of the iceberg so far, and we're going to keep on bringing them to you. So thank you again, everybody, from myself, Miles,
yeah.
and over there on the phone.
It's Brent here.
You take care.
See,
stay safe.
Time.
You did. That was good. I'll leave that one as well. But yeah, take care. Stay safe. Keep the music dialed up to 11. Take care, everyone.
See ya.